Open to Genesis chapter 48. Genesis chapter 48, please give your attention to God's holy word. And it came to pass after these things that one told Joseph, "Behold, thy father is sick." And he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. And one told Jacob and said, "Behold, thy son Joseph cometh unto thee." And Israel strengthened himself and sat upon the bed. And Jacob said unto Joseph, "God Almighty appeared unto me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me, and said unto me, Behold, I will make thee fruitful and multiply thee, and I will make of thee a multitude of people, and will give this land to thy seed after thee for an everlasting possession. And now thy two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, which were born unto thee in the land of Egypt before I came unto thee into Egypt, are mine as Reuben and Simeon, they shall be mine. And thy issue, which thou begettest after them, shall be thine, and shall be called after the name of their brethren in their inheritance. And as for me, when I came from Padan, Rachel died by me in the land of Canaan in the way, when yet there was but a little way to come unto Ephrath. And I buried her there in the way of Ephrath. The same is Bethlehem. And Israel beheld Joseph's sons and said, Who are these? And Joseph said unto his father, They are my sons, whom God hath given me in this place. And he said, Bring them, I pray thee, unto me, and I will bless them. Now the eyes of Israel were dim for age, so that he could not see. And he brought them near unto him, and he kissed them and embraced them. And Israel said unto Joseph, I had not thought to see thy face, and lo, God hath showed me also thy seed. And Joseph brought them out from between his knees, and he bowed himself with his face to the earth. And Joseph took them both, Ephraim, in his right hand toward Israel's left hand, and Manasseh, in his left hand toward Israel's right hand, and brought them near unto him. And Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it upon Ephraim's head, who was the younger, and his left hand upon Manasseh's head, guiding his hands wittingly, for Manasseh was the firstborn. And he blessed Joseph and said, God, before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac did walk, the God which fed me all my life long unto this day, the angel which redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads. And let my name be named on them, and the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. And when Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand upon the head of Ephraim, it displeased him, and he held up his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head unto Manasseh's head. And Joseph said unto his father, Not so, my father, for this is the firstborn. Put thy right hand upon his head. And his father refused and said, I know it, my son, I know it. He also shall become a people, and he also shall be great. But truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his seed shall become a multitude of nations. And he blessed them that day, saying, In thee shall Israel bless, saying, God make thee as Ephraim and as Manasseh. And he set Ephraim before Manasseh. And Israel said unto Joseph, Behold, I die, but God shall be with you, and bring you again unto the land of your fathers. Moreover, I have given to thee one portion above thy brethren, which I took out of the hand of the Amorite with my sword and with my bow. Thus ends the reading of God's holy word. Having heard in the previous chapter this morning of how the time drew nigh that Israel or Jacob must die, we are now given an account of what has been called the last act of Jacob's life. Joseph, being notified of what appears to be Jacob's final illness, gathers his two sons with him to see his father. Some have understood in this passage that Jacob has summoned Joseph, and if so, thereby we see Joseph's respect and reverence for his father, but not simply as a father, but as the patriarch of the covenant people of God. You may remember that at this time, the family and the church was not so distinct as in later redemptive history. And so there are both extraordinary and ordinary matters to be observed in these relations. Now, many good commentaries will suggest that Joseph sought to see his father before he should die of his sickness in his old age, so that his father should bless his two sons. If this was true, and we have no reason to doubt that it was, there is something to learn from Joseph in that he who was higher than all in the land but Pharaoh has all else under him and so much at his pleasure and disposal still understands and desires for his children the covenant blessing, that they not merely take on the goods of Egypt, but receive the good of heaven in that typical Canaan, the favor of God by the covenant made with Jacob, Isaac, and Abraham. As it was said of Moses in Hebrews 11, he esteemed the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. Let us learn from this and be encouraged from Joseph's example to likewise esteem the things of Christ, even his reproach, more of value than the riches and treasures and pleasures of this world. And parents, be encouraged in your esteeming it of most value for your children as well, whatever their age. Which leads us into our next consideration of Manasseh and Ephraim. We're not told exactly how old they are at this point, but calculations usually have them in their 20s. Considering that they were born before the famine had begun, in chapter 41, Jacob is beckoned to move to Egypt with the news that Joseph is yet alive around the second year of famine in chapter 45. And then we're told Jacob remained in Egypt for 17 years in the previous chapter. Understanding the current chapter covering the end, the very end of those 17 years as he is about to die. So they're around 20s, roughly. Note that in verse 2, Jacob's hearing of his sons coming to him in his weakness and illness says he strengthened himself and sat upon the bed as though to give himself toward his last and important task. The writer of Hebrews will comment on this occasion that, quote, by faith Jacob, when he was a dying, blessed both the sons of Joseph and worshipped, leaning upon the top of his staff. Leaning. Why leaning? As Matthew Henry will answer, intimating to us his great natural weakness, that he was not able to support himself so far as to sit up in his bed without a staff, and yet that he would not make this an excuse for neglecting the worshiping of God. He would do it as well as he could with his body, as well as with his spirit, though he could not do it as well as he would. In verses 3 to 4, we have Jacob reiterating the covenant promise made to him at Luz, also known as Bethel, which is the same promise made to his father Isaac in Gerar, in chapter 26 of Genesis, and Abraham as well earlier. He reiterates this covenant promise to connect it with the act that he is about to perform in adopting Joseph's two sons, as it were, and blessing them as if they were Jacob's own children in the place of Reuben and Simeon. If you recall, Reuben and Simeon were Jacob's first and second born by Leah. Reuben had lost his inheritance by defiling his father's bed in sleeping with Bilhah, his father's concubine. Simeon, along with Levi, took part in slaying the men of the city which Hamor and Shechem were over, and after having agreed to be circumcised so that Shechem could have Jacob's daughter Dinah to wife. Jacob will say of Simeon and Levi, ye have troubled me to make me stink among the inhabitants of the land. Later in Joshua 19, we'll see an explanation that the Simeonites ended up living among the inheritance of Judah. From these events, we may observe to be very wary of anything that should compete with our interest in the covenant promises, which are ours in Jesus Christ. As Hebrews 12 says, 14 through 15, to say, follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord, looking diligently, lest if any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. Verse 5, we see that Jacob gives inheritance to Ephraim and Manasseh as if they were his own firstborn and secondborn children, and then from there, Jacob recounts the death of Rachel and her burial. Jacob appears here to be explaining the reason for his elevating of Joseph as his firstborn, and in him a double portion through his sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. This makes sense, given Rachel, one, was the woman Jacob loved so much, two, was the one he had originally committed to labor for in order to marry, but was later deceived by his uncle and given Leah instead. Three, Rachel was barren for some time while Leah was conceiving children. And four, once Rachel began conceiving, she died after giving birth to Benjamin. her second son, and therefore Jacob couldn't have any more children through her. And so now he turns to give the firstborn inheritance right to Joseph, that firstborn through Rachel. In verse 9, it should say that Joseph said unto his father, "They are my sons," that is Manasseh and Ephraim, "whom God hath given me in this place." Here Joseph recognizes his children are given by God. As that verse in Psalm 127 says, "Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward." And then the passage continues. It said that he, Jacob, said, "Bring them, I pray thee, unto me, and I will bless them." A brief comment on the nature of this blessing is appropriate. We mentioned earlier that there is both something ordinary, right, something regular, and something extraordinary, something unusual in many of Jacob's actions. One is as a father. Another as a patriarch, performing priestly, prophetic, and kingly functions. So while none here today, right, are prophets in that extraordinary sense, nevertheless, it is appropriate for parents to seek to bless their children by praying to God with and for them, for their partaking in the spiritual inheritance especially. It has been the remembrance of a faithful parent's prayers with and for their children that have been the means of many Christian children being upheld in times of testing and trial later in life. And for others, it has been the means of drawing them back to the faith after departing from it. Children, you should desire to be blessed by God through the prayers of your parents. All of your life, prayers for your partaking of the spiritual inheritance according to the covenant of grace, and for all good and lawful things in Christ. To have someone given by God to you to pray for you continually in this life. Children, it's a wonderful encouragement to have. Give thanks for it. Seek it. Encourage your parents in and to it to pray with and for you. Returning to verse 10 and 11, it says that Jacob brought Manasseh and Ephraim near, and he kissed them and embraced them and remarks to Joseph how he had never imagined that he would see Joseph's face. But lo and behold, God has not only showed me your face, but your children's face as well. This is a moving moment in the narrative. Jacob is warmly affected as a father and grandfather for his son and grandchildren. But even more, there is a redemptive element so that Jacob is glorying in God's covenant mercy. He is glorying in God that is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think, as Ephesians 3:20 says, right? In causing him to see the face of that covenant heir and his seed, whom he thought was dead long ago. Behold, Christian, though you do not see it yet and may never see it, the Lord is working in ways you cannot see or understand. Your labors and prayers for the advancement of God's kingdom and his covenant promises are not futile. He will satisfy them in his own way and in his own time. Someone has said, if not here, then for certain there, that is in heaven. In verse 12, you see Joseph bows himself and he puts forward his children according to age, right, to his father, both as patriarch and as a natural father. We see an action similar to this later in Solomon, right, this bowing down of Joseph to his father. Solomon, although like Joseph in high position, will bow before his mother Bathsheba in 1 Kings 2:19, giving a double honor, as it were, one as their natural parent, and two as the chosen means through whom the Christ, the covenant salvation, should come through. Joseph here presents his sons as they would be blessed according to age, as we mentioned. Jacob may be of poor sight, but he does what he does intentionally, right? Says he did it wittingly, right? And crosses his right hand over onto Ephraim's head, and the younger one, and his left hand onto Manasseh's head, the older one. He then pronounces the blessing. The covenant God of his fathers, Abraham, and Isaac, which did provide for him all his life. The angel which redeemed him from all evil, bless the lads. What angel is this that Jacob is speaking of? Well, we go back in Jacob's story, chapter 31 of Genesis, verse 11. And the angel of God spake unto me in a dream, saying, Jacob. And I said, here am I. And in verse 13, the angel of God said, I am the God of Bethel, where thou anointest the pillar, and where thou vowest a vow unto me. Now arise, get thee out from this land, and return unto the land of thy kindred. What angel is this? It's God the Son, Christ himself, right? The Son of God the Father, the angel of the covenant, as Malachi 3:1 shall term him. If it's not clear already, it should be clear by now that Jacob's faith, the blessing, the covenant, right, which he is a patriarch of, is not some carnal, temporal covenant, but the covenant of grace, which Jesus Christ alone is mediator of. Farther note, when he says, let my name be named on them, and the name of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac. Understand this not simply as a natural pride, but association with the exclusive redemptive covenant of God. If you are not spiritually associated with Jacob, Isaac, and Abraham, you have no association with God the Redeemer. Joseph then finally looks and perceives his father in error by the placement of his hands, perhaps due to his weakness and poor sight. It was ordinary to give the right hand blessing, that which was greater, to the firstborn. However, right, what Joseph perceives through his natural conceptions, Jacob clarifies, according to the prophetical spirit, that the placement of his hands and thereby the respective blessing was not a mistake or a blunder. Matthew Henry will comment on this passage, observing how often God, by the distinguishing favors of his covenant, advanced the younger above the elder, Abel above Cain, Shem above Japheth, Abraham above Nahor and Haran, Isaac above Ishmael, Jacob above Esau, Judah and Joseph were preferred before Reuben, Moses before Aaron, David and Solomon before their elder brethren. And so we learn, as Joseph then learned, God does not tie himself so as to work according to what we should expect in our creaturely conceptions. But as Henry would again say, he often gives most to those that are least likely. He chooses the weak things of the world, raises the poor out of the dust. Grace observes not the order of nature, nor does God prefer those whom we think fittest to be preferred, but as it pleases him. Jacob then declares that in future time, their descendants, that is, of Manasseh and Ephraim, the people of Israel, would pronounce benedictions, prayers, and declarations of their well-wishing, that God make thee as Ephraim and Manasseh, those whom are regarded as the firstborn by adoption of Jacob, whom God would make great. A similar blessing, but for a woman, might be seen in Ruth 4:11. The Lord make the woman that is come into thine house like Rachel and like Leah, which too did build the house of Israel. And in verse 21, it should say that Israel said unto Joseph, behold, I die, but God shall be with you and bring you again unto the land of your fathers. Here we're helped by our translation to note that you is plural, right? We are thereby to understand Jacob saying that God will bring you all again unto the land of your fathers. That is, you all and not me. So this is not directed at Joseph personally, as we'll see later that Joseph actually ends up dying before they go back, as though he himself should see it, but those who would come after Jacob's death through their posterity in Joshua's time. In the final verse of chapter 48, should note that when Jacob says, moreover, I have given to thee one portion above thy brethren, the Hebrew word for portion there is Shechem. You remember that in Genesis 33, Jacob is said to come to a city of Shechem, where he buys a field from the children of Hamor, Shechem's father. Shechem, the person, was the one who wanted Jacob's daughter Dinah as his wife and who Simeon and Levi slew. Shechem, thereafter in Genesis, is referred constantly as a place where Jacob's caravan should bury their idols and monuments of idolatry, and where the brothers are said to feed the flock before Joseph is sent on an errand to check on them in chapter 37. It is in Shechem that Joshua will later gather the people before his death and give that famous appeal, choose you this day whom ye will serve, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Joseph's bones will be brought to and buried in Shechem and referred to as the inheritance that Jacob gave Joseph in Joshua 24 and in John chapter 4, verse 5. Many good commentators will agree that Jacob here is giving what is his own to his firstborn through Rachel, Joseph as his inheritance. Where there is some difference of opinion is how to understand the second portion of this verse, which says, "Which I took out of the hand of the Amorite with my sword and with my bow." We never read of Jacob having fought the Amorite with sword and bow for Shechem. So there have been different solutions offered to this apparent difficulty. One, some have understood Jacob to be speaking proleptically, as though he's speaking prophetically of himself through his children fighting off those who would be in the land when they come out of Egypt. Others have understood Jacob to be referring to some previous time, not written, right? Where upon his absence, Amorites came and took Shechem, and he went and gained it back from them. Still others, like Calvin, suggest that Jacob is referring to the occasion of which Simeon and Levi have been prime evil actors in, and that although their victory over them was ill-gotten, Jacob strips them of their empty title, that is, strips his sons, Simeon and Levi. He transfers this right of victory to himself as being divinely granted to him. He appropriates to himself the land left empty and deserted by their destruction. Whichever of these options should be most likely, we can safely gather from each of these considerations that in the words of our confession of faith, that the providence of God in a most special manner takes care of his church and disposes all things to the good thereof. Whether that be the evil acts of Simeon and Levi within and among the covenant people, or the wicked conquest of the unbelieving Amorites and the opposition of the unbelieving Canaanite peoples, God orders and disposes them all for the good of his church. Thus concludes our time in Genesis 48.